Impact Leaders, the podcast on leaders focusing on impact investment and performance with purpose, supporting the companies that are solving the world's biggest challenges. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact. And this is your host, JP Dahlman.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Impact Leaders. Today is a special podcast as I want to dedicate this one to my father who recently passed away. We were going to be recording this podcast about a month ago, but we needed to postpone it so I could take some time to be with my mother and my family. But so apologies to the listeners for the delay, but I know that you were looking forward to the next episode, and here we are. So in today's episode of Impact Leaders, we have Damien Lardoux as a guest. Hi, Damien. Welcome.
Hi, JP. How are you?
Very well, very well. Thank you so much for being with us today. Damien is the head of impact investing at EQ Investors. EQ is an award-winning chartered financial planning firm with over 60 staff in London and 2,000 clients all around the UK. Their emphasis on doing things the right way has struck a chord with people who are tired of being treated as numbers by organizations only interested in growing their profits. They are one of the fastest growing wealth managers in the UK, but they won't be selling out. They are committed to being a staff-owned business. At EQ, they have a strong sense of being a member of a wider community. They are proud to be one of the first UK companies to be awarded a B Corporation status, an international recognized standard for companies that believe in businesses as a force for good. And their positive impact portfolios are a unique proposition for clients who care about how and where their money is invested. So let's start with the question that we're trying to help listeners understand more about, Damien. So what is impact investing?
So the simple idea of impact investing, exactly as you said, is to align people's money with their values. You know, the idea is that, you know, you can, you know, utilize your money, your finances, to help make a positive impact on society and the environment. That's a very simple definition.
Perfect. In terms of the kind of definitions and clarifications, you know, if I look at your website on your current landing page, and your main initial message, it says that EQ investors are financial planners. However, you know, you actually are, as we know them, you know, wealth managers, and you act, you know, yourself as a portfolio manager. I know that many of the listeners understand the roles, synergies, and differences, but could you explain a bit more about how you work and how the different parts of the company come together?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. You know, historically, we were a wealth management firm, you know, looking directly with private clients and charities. So we've got, you know, 15 advisors, you know, in-house. And then also...
That's 15.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, alongside those financial advisors, there's a number of teams, you know, the technology team, which is building the impact calculator, for example, that we'll talk about, and a great client portal as well. We have a marketing team helping us with putting together the impact report that we will be talking about as well. And then also what's really important to us is to have, you know, a very good, well-established investment team, you know, providing to clients, you know, the best proposition so that they can achieve their financial goals. So we've got 11 people within our investment team, and those people will be managing money and also doing research in terms of asset allocation research and in terms of fund selection research to put together the best portfolios for clients to achieve their goals.
Perfect. And kind of what are you offering at EQ that other similar companies are not? Is there a key differentiator?
Sure. So I would say one of our key differentiating factors is our experience in impact investing, which we've had for the last 10 years. I mean, going back, you know, 10 years ago as a firm, we helped set up a macrofinance institution in Sierra Leone in Africa. And we also launched a private equity fund in 2011. So we've had you know, a lot of experience in impact investing. And probably, you know, as a wealth management firm working with private clients, you know, a key turning point for the company was in 2012 when I joined the firm, when we launched the EQ Positive Impact Portfolios, with the idea that, you know, we could bring impact investing to the masses. You know, we wanted Mr. and Mrs. Smith to be able to invest, you know, from £100 to, you know, several millions, and into investments that can make a positive impact on society and environment. So that's really a key differentiating factor of our proposition. And also, you know, we, for us, you know, it's really important to not to rest on our laurels. So, you know, with our clients, we're on an impact journey. And, you know, we spend a lot of time engaging with fund managers, engaging with organizations to try to push the boundaries when it comes to impact. Because what's really important is not only to select the right companies, you know, where their intention to make the impact is really there, but it's also really important to report on the impact that's being achieved. And impact reporting is the fast-moving a part of our process. So we work with a number of you know, people around the industry to help push those boundaries.
Perfect. And then I was going to add, perhaps I really like I was watching that John Spears, who is the lead on the organization, has a bit of a short video on your website, and he talks about EQ. And then for those that don't know, EQ is the emotional quotient, and that's where the name comes from, and hence the alignment to values and what people believe in, right? And we definitely talk about your model, the port and the report in some of the other questions. So thank you for mentioning that. So in terms of understanding a bit more about, you know, the funds, you know, so where you mainly get your funds from, and you mentioned a little bit about that, and where you invest. So from previous conversations we had, I understand you currently manage over 800 million pounds in funds. So where do the majority of the funds come from?
So, I mean, so we've got, you know, two types of businesses. I mean, we have private clients who are coming directly to us and would like, you know, their money to make that positive impact, and also need the financial planning element. And then we also have financial advisors who have their own clients and then come and make our propositions available to their own clients. So there's, you know, there's two ways to work with us, either you are a private client or a financial advisor. We can help all those people, you know, make a positive impact, and that's actually quite important, because for us, we, you know, spreading the message of impact investing and making available to as many people as possible is really important. And we can, and probably we'll mention about sort of stumbling blocks we're facing with financial advisors and why impact investing is not, you know, rising as quickly as we think it could.
So in terms of you know, institutional investors, those are a very small percentage right now, or close to zero, right, in terms of where you source your funds from.
So we also work with charities and, you know, and institutional investors, charities, pension funds. Actually, we do have quite a few large clients. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. You know, our historically our core business has been you know, working with private clients. When John Spears took over the business in 2014, he invested a lot in our proposition. He invested a lot in our investment team. So by, you know, increasing, you know, the depth of the research and the quality of the service being provided, not only could we cater to the needs of private clients, but also our process was robust enough and appealing enough for institutional investors to also work directly with us.
Perfect. So if I understand, as I understand it, you operate mainly as a funds of funds, which is again for some of the listeners that do not know, means that you invest in other funds that they invest in other assets and companies, right? Such as, I think we talked about Hermes, which is one of the of the funds where you have allocated some of your money. So how much is it allocated out of the 800 million to impact investing?
Yes, so we have 120 million mm-hmm. Allocated to impact investing, and this is very fast growing, more than doubled over the last year.
Okay, and what kind of characteristics or variables do you look at normally when you are making your decision to allocate funds to these other funds?
Sure. So what's really important is that we're not reinventing the wheel. So, when we build a portfolio, if we to help clients achieve their financial goals, what's really important is building a portfolio with the right asset allocation, and then also having a very strong view on long-term themes, being healthcare, for example, or environmental mm-hmm. equities. So we take that sort of, if you want, big picture view. And once informed with that big picture view, then we can look for those fund managers who will help us to express those views by investing directly in companies. So that's step one. Then the step two, when we look for the funds, so really what we're looking for first is the intentionality mm-hmm. of impact. Does the fund manager and the team working alongside him or her really willing to say companies, contributing to solutions? That's really important, So that's first point. And not only we want to hear them saying so, but also what we do is that we want to look at the underlying companies themselves, so look through the fund if you want, and making sure that what we're seeing there is aligned with what they say. Mm-hmm. Are they really walking the talk, so to speak? Then also what we're really looking for is the concept of additionality of impact. So what does that mean is that you select companies which are helping to make an additional impact. So if they had not developed that product or had not developed that service, this impact would not have been achieved. And then,
sorry, just 1 second, so can you explain that again? So additionality is that from the fund's perspective, so what else they can do, or from the assets perspective?
So from the company's perspective. So if I give you an example, if you invest in water, let's say you invest in Thames Water, for example, they've been providing water to our tap, for decades and decades. So, the impact they're making is material, because if we don't have water, obviously we'll be in a tough situation, but it's not really additional. If you go into emerging markets and you're investing in an infrastructure company which is helping to provide water to populations who didn't have access to water before, this is what we call an additional impact. Okay. So we're really keen, when we think about making an impact, obviously making an impact in the emerging markets as per the United Sustainable Development Goals mm-hmm. is really important. So that concept of additionality is something we like. But then, you want also that impact to be measured. And that's the third point we're looking for, which is, the measurability of the impact. So we want the fund managers to engage with the companies to collect some data and tell us, the impact they've been achieved. Not only through the companies they're investing in, but also through the engagement they're making with the companies. Because I think it's really important to mention that there isn't a perfect company. So you need the fund manager, and that's the reason why we're paying them, a fee, is that we are looking for very strong engagement to push companies to improve their practices.
Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to the reporting and the tracking. But just before I move to that, I wanted to just double check with you. In average, if I am a fan that want to come to talk to Damien and EQ, what average ticket size or investment do you make, or have you made out of the 120 million so far?
It can vary between 2 to 10. Mm-hmm. Probably what's worth mentioning is that although we've got, you know, 120 million, as I said, you know, about, you know, 50% of our 15% of our assets into directly into impact investing, a number of our clients as well, who are in sort of more maybe traditional portfolios, they also have exposure to impact. And if we take our what we call our best ideas portfolios here, they will have exposure to funds which are impact funds. And we, you know, the if you're on the portfolio managers of our best ideas portfolios, more traditional portfolios, really like the long-term story, let's say, for example, of healthcare or environmental equities, and will add some exposure, you know, of these themes into and into the best ideas portfolio. So if you want, you know, we are with a number of our, with all our clients, is they are actually experiencing impact. Some are going for pure impact and some are going for maybe a light touch of impact.
And it's worth asking as well. So all of these kind of models and approaches are all in-house, or you're not benchmarking from any other companies or or famous, you know, portfolio managers or wealth managers or.
So all the research is done in-house. That's why we've got 11 people in our investment team. So we do use, for example, some macro research from external providers. And we just want to, you know, make sure that we keep our, you know, our eyes open on what's happening in the world. But, you know, when it comes to fund research, when it comes to, you know, our decision-making process, everything is done in-house.
Perfect. And what returns are you aiming for?
So it's so that's a very tricky question because the what we do with clients is that they invest for the long term. You know, we're talking, you know, pension money, so they might be investing for the next 10, 15, 20, if not more years. So the you know, the returns which are going to be achieved, you know, are very much depends as well on how the markets themselves are going to perform. So it's not an it's not a mandate where we'll say, you know, we're going to give you a return of 5% every single year. No, it's not the way it works. So the way it works with private clients is that you build a portfolio based on a risk profile. You know, how much risk they are willing to take and able to take, and also what are their financial goals, you know. So if they need a lot of growth, you know, in their pension, for example, to achieve their financial goals, it means that they probably would need to take more risk to achieve those goals in the future. So that's the way it works, is that we don't promise a return, but we build a portfolio to help clients achieve their goals in the future.
Okay, so that's from the client's perspective, investing into EQ. And then from the other side, in terms of, you know, what you would expect from the funds, getting funds from you, do you actually set the, some targets to them?
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. So when we invest in a fund, the idea is that we want to maximize both the financial return and the impact. So we'll talk about later about the impact, but on the financial return side, we compare the fund's performance to a mainstream benchmark. So if you take global equities, for example, and you talked about Hermes, their impact opportunities fund, which we like and which we've invested in, we'll compare that fund's performance against MSCI World Index, or the very mainstream index. Because we invested in those strategies because we believe that they will outperform over the long term. And we believe they are actually very strong, very good, you know, investment vehicles. But obviously, to track performance over time, you need a benchmark. And actually, for our portfolios as well, we've got a benchmark. So it's yeah, it's an industry practice to make sure that yeah, you're delivering what you're supposed to.
Okay, perfect. Any other, what else do they need to show for you to be kind of comfortable or attracted to, you know, invested in them?
So probably the first thing I would say is transparency. That's really important. I think, you know, the asset management industry maybe in the past have maybe have had some practices where, you know, they're not really transparent. And even today, actually, if you're an investor, it's very hard for you to know where you're investing in. You know, you may have on the fact sheet the top 10 holdings, but there are many other holdings that you can't see. So for us, you know, we want transparency in terms of what they're investing in. We want clarity on the process, how they're going to generate the financial return we're expecting them to, how they are they going to achieve the impact that they're claiming they will, and how they're going to measure it. And then also, actually, we want them to be willing to be on the journey with us. So what do I mean by that? Is that, you know, impact investing is a fast-moving industry and a fast-moving way of rethinking, you know, investing. And because it's fast-moving, that no one can rest on his or her laurels, you know. You need to keep, you know, your eyes open, your ears open. You need to keep challenging yourself, you know, keep pushing the boundaries. So we want for managers to do the same.
Perfect. And then perhaps because I have had conversations with you, you know, before, and I was lucky enough to be in one of the presentations on the report, what I picked up is that you do work on your relationships with them. So you kind of study them, you meet them, you know, you take some time, maybe even, I think somebody said a couple of years, until you build a relationship and an understanding of what they're doing, until you actually make a decision.
Yes, that absolutely right. You know, there's a, you know, the when we invest, and that's very much the idea of impact investing, this is long-term investing. You know, we're not talking, you know, we don't want to be involved in short-termism, you know. It's so when you allocate capital to a fund manager, you're going to do it for the next 3, 5, if not 10 years. Yeah. So you need to have, you know, confidence that they're going to help you achieve your financial and impact goals. So you're absolutely right. You know, we will have, you know, a very deep, and an ongoing discussion with those managers. I mean, you mentioned Hermes. So as an example, we were in discussion with them 18 months prior to the launch of their fund. And we've had that very healthy very healthy discussion with them in terms of how they wanted to build that fund they launched. So that's really important to us. Nice. Yes.
And any other one of your investees that are worth mentioning that, you know, because we mentioned one already so many times. Sure. It sounds like we're advertising them, but there's no advertisement going.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about equities. Obviously, it might be worth talking about bonds as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a fund manager who you know, we've been working for years with him and actually and his team as well, called Simon Bond, and he launched about 5 years ago, what's called the Threadneedle, Columbia Threadneedle UK Social Bond Fund. And it was seeded by Big Issue Invest. Mm-hmm. And really the idea behind that fund is that you can, you know, help, you know, use your capital to make a positive impact, you know, through the fixed income market. And by doing so, you can have access to companies which are very different, and organizations very different from what you're seeing in the listed equity market. Mm-hmm. If I just give you some examples, you know, for example, it's very much a UK-centric fund. So you can help finance universities, for example. So Manchester University, for example, they've been raising some funds to help them refurbish their premises. You know, that could be one way. Charities as well. I mean, I think it's probably not known by many people that there are some very good charities in terms of, you know, in terms of the robustness of their balance sheets, you know, their financial strength, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. And they're coming to the market to raise capital. And that's what's called the retail charity bonds.
Yeah.
And Simon Bond and his team are helping those charity to raise money in the capital market. So, yeah, that's really a fund that we really like as well. Yeah.
Excellent. And that is basically, yeah, fixed income and bonds, which is another way, because otherwise they'll be kind of struggling to go and fundraise, you know, on they cannot go to equities, they cannot go anywhere else, right?
Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay. So just before we jump to measurement and tracking, I just want to just touch on a risk profile and building risk profile for clients and I think you have a couple of different tools that clients can use, I think online or mm-hmm. is it all through the FIs or how does it work?
So, I mean, for client to assess
their, this is the normal individual, by the way.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So you're absolutely right. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You know, if they want to, to have a look at what we call their financial health, we've developed an online tool called the Financial Health Check, and basically they can put details, you know, about their financial situation, and then it will help them find out whether or not they will be able to achieve their financial goal in the future. I mean, this is a tool which is, if you want, helping people to think about it. But what's really important is I think a financial tool is just a starting point for then a deeper conversation with a financial planner who can maybe adjust the calculations and have that sort of deep conversation with the with the client to find out more about their financial situation and then build with them, a plan which will help them meet their goals. And the goals, not only in terms of financial goals, but also it could be their impact goals, you know, either through their investments or even maybe through, you know, giving, you know, through philanthropy. So that's one tool exactly that people have online. And then also, obviously, with a financial planner, a client will spend some time thinking about the risk they're able and willing to take. But that you need to be accompanied. There's some companies called the robo advisors where you can do it online. Well, in our experience, most people, when it comes to their investments, you know, money they've been accumulated over the years, you know, after, you know, a lot of hard work, they like being reassured by a human.
Yeah, and this is mainly basically Q&As, right? So there is no specific kind of methodology. It's just about exploring. Yeah,
you're absolutely right. Yes,
and just again, just to finish that part, in terms of time, how long does it take for somebody to do the financial check tool, and then how long it would take normally, you know, to actually sit down with the financial planner?
Okay, I mean, I think you can go online for a financial health check tool and spend, you know, 10-15 minutes and have, you know, a first idea of how healthy, so to speak, your financial situation is. But then once you have a sit down with a financial planner, then it very much depends on your own situation. You know, it could be an hour discussion, it could be a longer discussion depending on your personal circumstances.
Excellent. Okay. So I know you have an excellent, you know, impact report. I mean, this is 2018, which is the one that I attended to the presentation, which I highly recommend for people to read. But can you share with us, how do you measure and want to measure your impact?
Sure. So, I mean, when we talked about impact investing, probably what I haven't stressed enough is the importance of the type of companies you invest in. So really our idea is to, you know, contribute to, you know, to solutions, is to invest in those companies, usually innovative by nature, which are developing product and services, helping to tackle the many challenges that we're all familiar with, you know, around, you know, education, around, you know, healthcare, around, you know, climate change. So to do that, we believe that, you know, then the focus on our impact reporting should be first on the products and services themselves, you know, how those products and services are helping to, let's say, meet, for example, the UN, United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, for example. So to do that, we will look at every single company we invest in. So if you take a medium risk profile, a balanced risk profile, there's about 600 companies within our equity portion. And we will look at every single company and then look at the data they are reporting in regards to the impact they're making through their products and services. And then based on that data, we know that if you invest in our portfolios, you will own a fraction of those companies. And then being a small shareholder of those companies, you are partly responsible for the impact those companies have achieved. And this is how we can report on the impact that clients have achieved over the last years through the investments. But obviously, you know, you look at every company and, you know, there's they're all making an impact but in a very different way. So there's about 100 different impact indicators mm-hmm. that we've collected data for. What we've been publishing on, reporting on, are those indicators which are the most common and the most published by the companies we invest in. So you have in our report, you know, 12 indicators, 6 social, 6 environmental, you know, going from, let's say, the amount of renewable energy being generated to the number of patients being treated, for example. Yeah, so the idea here is that we want to help people to really understand with their own investment into the portfolios how much impact they've achieved. Over the last year.
Perfect. Okay, and I know, I mean, we don't want to go into like the full detail of it, but I definitely recommend the Positive Impact Portfolios Investors Impact Report 2019. I'm trying to remember, is it available on the online as well?
Exactly, yes.
So people can go and have a look, and there you can clearly see on the first page, kind of over the last year, it says 1 million invested in the adventures portfolio has, and then you have specific measurements that the company are, as Damien mentioned, putting all together, bringing everything together, and then finding a way to actually show to people how their funds and their money is impacting the world, which is fascinating. Again, sometimes we underestimate how much work, you know, it goes behind this. You know, how much, you know, some people sometimes wonder, you know, when they don't know, you know, what do the research teams do, and what do, you know, this is what they do. You know, they
exactly.
help us, you know, understand and actually measure everything that we're doing. So 100 impact indicators to try to summarize them into 12 is quite some work. And also there is no so far there is the SDGs as a reference, so the Sustainable Development Goals, but obviously everyone is there is no one way of measuring, right? So everyone is trying to come up with a system or a methodology. As I understand that you have come up with yours.
Yes.
And I think there is a challenge there around how do we then, you know, bring everything and everyone together to actually show that we're really achieving all the goals by 2030 as we're aiming, though, right? I have seen some presentations in terms of the evolution what we have achieved so far, and basically we are still, depending on which country and in which theme or sector or target, we are quite advanced in some, but quite well off the mark on some others. So, so on that note, do you actually feed this information to any other organization? Or
so, yeah, I mean that's it's really important. It's a collegial work. Is that so? There's many different projects we've been working on. We've worked on one with the UN in regards to putting together some KPIs and indicators that people can use when it comes to impact reporting. We're also part of a project that actually Bridges Ventures and a few others have helped set up, called the Impact Management Project. We publish on our website, and there's a link in the report on methodology. And the idea being here is that we want to be very transparent, and also, so every time we meet with a fund manager and they want to know more about impact reporting, then we share our methodology mm-hmm. with them. But also, what we do a lot is to brainstorm with fund managers, organizations, on sort of what are the next steps, you know, how are we going to, you know, improve on what we're doing. It's very much a journey we are on. So we've got one of our team members who is only dedicated to that work, impact reporting, and then engaging with a number of organizations. So, yeah, really the idea is, I think you can't really be isolated on your island. You need to work alongside.
Perfect. And then we already talked about how you track the funds and where you invest in and how they're delivering on their strategies. And also you mentioned now that you work with them, you know, collaboratively. And then also you made a comment about how you actually check on the companies and they're investing in and how they're delivering on their promises. On the last meeting we had, the presentation, you know, you also talked about the supply chain and the challenges around that. Do you want to just briefly, you know, mention that so that people understand how we are aware, and then what you are aware and what the market is trying to do about, you know, what happens down the chain?
Yes. So no, you're absolutely right. So you can have a fantastic product or service which is helping to tackle one of the goals we just mentioned, but if you're doing it at the expense of the environment in terms of your manufacturing process, or in terms of, you know, how much you're paying your staff, if they're not getting a decent salary, then you know your net impact is questionable. So really, the idea is that you're absolutely right. When you measure the impact, not only do you want at the company level to look at the impact achieved by the product and services, but you also want to look at the operational side of the business and see, you know, how much, you know, how they're sourcing their raw materials, for example, you know, how much they're paying their staff, are they trying, you know, to reduce their, you know, their sort of impact on the environment. And that's really you know, really important to us to have the sort of the big picture and that impact, because what you want to avoid is being led by a company, if you want, and their marketing spiel potentially telling you this is all the good things we're doing. And we see, for example, some companies, let's say, for example, it's quite topical, you know, I talk about Shell, we talk about, you know, Exxon, those sort of big oil major companies, they're making big announcements around the fact that they're going into renewable energy, or, you know, they want to, you know, reduce their sort of carbon footprint. So fair enough, you know, they might be reducing the carbon footprint linked to the extraction of the fossil fuels from the ground. And this is the data they're reporting on. The data they're not reporting on is how the fossil fuels they've extracted is then being used by the cars and the trucks, and what impact it does have on our environment. Yeah. So yeah, definitely you want to have an independent view on what the company is disclosing, and then pushing them for further disclosures if you don't know enough about it.
Yeah. And then just for reference as well, so that, you know, in case people haven't thought about it, but some of these organizations, I think we were talking about JSK in one of the meetings, and they have like 26,000 kind of suppliers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes quite hard to police, you know, all of, and then behind those there are second and third levels, right? But there are organizations, you know, trying to work on this, and that's something that perhaps we'll cover in another one of the episodes of Impact Leaders. So now, if we move to kind of the evolution and traction of impact investment, coincidentally, I think last week, in a recent Bloomberg interview, TPG's co-founder and co-CEO, Jim Coulter, I don't know if you happen to know him, but he was highlighting that private equity and impact investing are the two core areas of attention from families. I'm assuming he was mentioning family offices there and institutions right now, and that 65% of the people that they're talking to, I'm assuming he was alluding to some kind of survey, expect companies to be the drivers of change and the change of, you know, what's happening in the world. So today, you know, impact investors are kind of starting to attract mainstream, you know mm-hmm. private banks, you know, including Partners Group. We mentioned it on the last episode of Impact Leaders, Lombard Odier in Switzerland, and AXA Investment in France. And then there are some companies in the UK that are kind of getting more behind these in the private equity side. And obviously, you are a great example, right? But what have you seen that has, you know, changed? You know, so you mentioned that you started here with the portfolios in 2012. Mm-hmm. But what have you observed that is changing and is happening, you know, for impact investing to be mentioned, you know, by people like Jim Coulter?
I think, you know, what has changed is a very strong rise in awareness that two things that we need to address, you know, the many challenges we're facing. And two, actually, we can do it while also generating a financial return. And I think, you know, on the first point, you know, these, you know, you mentioned, you know, the United Sustainable Development Goals in 2015, agreed by over 150 countries in the world. That was a turning point because it was the first time we had, you know, a call to action, a very clear call to action to corporates, to governments, to individuals about what are the 17 most pressing issues to be tackled. And at the same time, we also had the Paris Summit, you know, the climate summit in 2015, at the end of 2015. And also there was a key turning point because, again, we had most countries in the world agreeing that they will do their best to limit the increase, you know, in temperature below the 2 degree level that that, you know, a number of scientists are saying that we could get into a lot of troubles. So in 2015 was a key turning point. I think the probably another turning point, probably more UK focused, was the Blue Planet documentary, you know, around plastic. I mean, over the last 18 months, it's just amazing how much, you know, plastic has been in the day-to-day discussions, yes. You know, yeah. And how much actually companies have changed their, you know, their processes or their behaviors, trying to bring down the use of single-use plastic. And you know, with all those things happening, and also, you know, there isn't a day when you don't see in the newspaper or on TV a journalist not talking about climate change or social issues. So, you know, it's all around us. But then also, I think that's in terms of, you know, people know that something has to be done. What I think is happening is a growing number of evidences, you know, studies, reports, showing to those investors, particularly the institutional investors, that they can make that positive impact while also generating a financial return. And actually, even telling them that if you don't take sustainability issues into account in your process or in your investments, your investments are at risk. And, you know, and oil, for example, is a big example around the risk of stranded assets and how much money you could lose in the future by not taking, for example, carbon pricing into your modeling. So that's probably the sort of two turning points. And then the fantastic news, you know, working with financial advisors on my side, is that clients are bit more proactive with the financial advisor, saying, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, I've heard about it. There's a number of, I would say, more mainstream asset managers who really understand that there is a demand and there's a fantastic investment case for impact investing, and have launched their proposition. So, you know, clients get aware of that. And then they go to their financial advisors and say, my financial advisor, I would like to have some of my investments making an impact. And then those advisors, you know, they come and talk to us and say, okay, so can you tell me more about your portfolio? So I think there's a combination of media pushing for it, asset managers realizing that there's a great investment, also business case for it. Yeah. And also I think clients being more willing to align the investment with the values.
Excellent. And what do you think are the biggest challenges now that we have in the next, let's say, we have 11 years to achieve these goals?
Yes. I think people don't realize the scale of investments needed to achieve these goals. I mean, a recent survey by the GIIN, the Global Impact Investing Network, and the United Nations said that we need $5 to $7 trillion a year of capital. So I mean that's just mind-blowing. So at the moment we're probably doing less than $1 trillion a year, so we're definitely not there. So it means that, you know, if we want to achieve those goals, you know, it means, you know, everyone needs to get involved. But I think, you know, not only you want to, you know, you are sort of being asked to get involved to to make that positive impact, but also because there's a fantastic, you know, business case, an investment case here. You know, if you have developed a product which is helping to reduce, let's say, carbon emissions, or which is making people's health better, or if you're helping to improve the education being provided, then you've got a fantastic market to address. Mm. And the market, which is there today, but also which is growing in size in the future. So those companies, they've been doing really well over the last year, but they've got the prospect for them in the long term are even better. So I think to me is that the fantastic story is that you have your cake and you can eat it, and that's what we need to tell clients. One of the stumbling block, and then, so if I go back to the financial advisors,
yes,
but
yes,
the industry I know well, I think one of the stumbling blocks is the financial advisors who are, in general, so if I generalize a bit, is that they think about it like ethical investing, which was all about the screen out, and they don't really want to have those conversations with the clients, maybe because they don't feel comfortable enough talking about it. So I think people like us, and you know, and financial bodies, we have a role and a duty to spread the message, explain why impact investing makes sense for a private client and a charity and a pension fund. So that's another challenge. And I think as well, we need maybe my last point. We need regulation.
Mm-hmm.
To help us spread the word. You know, we need to, not only we need governments to be examples of and leaders of change, but also we need a framework to help people make that positive impact in terms of, you know, in terms of suitability of products, in terms of availability of products. So we need, I think, definitely the regulators to step in and help spread the message and make it easier for private clients, pension funds, charities, institutional investors to get involved in impact investing.
Excellent. So if I replay that, what I hear basically is around focus on improving potentially policies, right, mm-hmm. from the government side, for them to actually, you know, just kind of create more awareness, right, and a framework. The regulators to try to support, you know, the actions that, you know, companies want to take and we need to take, so that individuals have access and can invest, you know, directly and understand what they're doing. And there is, if I understand correctly as well, a bit of almost like awareness and training yes. around, you know, the financial advisors to try to get them to get their clients, individuals, to actually, you know, step up as well. And then from that perspective, I guess the responsibility on the banks, we have independent financial advisors, but we also have, you know, large banks as well, that they have, you know, huge teams, and they, you know, hold a lot of funds for many of the retail clients, right? So it's something that, you know, people that we interview in the podcast, you know, was highlighting about. Because I was going to ask you, so is that great collaboration, right, between engaging, participating, educating, and obviously, you know, we can throw in there philanthropy and other things, right? So spread the message, you know, training, access, all of that together, that's what we're saying.
Exactly, yeah.
Perfect. And if we jump quickly to, like, what is available today, right, yes. and current financial instruments, right? So, kind of what is, and then maybe touching a little bit and reopening the question around, you know, what is the role of, you know, financial institutions, you know, in using current products to support and accelerate, you know, impact? So there is a split between, let's say, you know, most people, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, as you refer to, high net worth individuals and institutions, you know. We have requirements from regulators today where, you know, mainly sophisticated investors can invest. But you have a model where people can invest as little as, you know, £50 per month, right? So just to kind of reiterate and sediment that, you know, so how how do people do that? So today, basically, they just come to you and then just to clarify, because they can do it through their financial advisors
as well,
and they can use some platforms as well, right, where
yes.
they can allocate directly without even coming to talk to you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right. There's two channels. You know, either they come directly to us, where we've got in-house financial planners, and also they can go and talk to their own financial planners, who can you actually write through the platforms, invest in our portfolios.
And we talked about a kind of patient capital, right? So how long do people have to wait until they can kind of get their money back? Do they actually have to think, you know, 5, 10, 20 years, or is it liquid?
Sure. So, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's two things. Is how much you should... what's your sort of investment horizon should be, and your liquidity of your investment. So in terms of your investment horizon, I think it's commonly sort of said that, you know, if you need to have at least 5 years in terms of your investment horizon. I think for any type of investment, if it's not a cash product. So that's what you need to have, you know, at least in mind. But then what's really important is that, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, tomorrow their situation might change. So this is where the liquidity of your investments is really important. So we only invest in funds which are, you know, daily liquid. So if tomorrow you needed your money back, then within a week you'll get your money back. So that's, you know, that I think really important. This is, although it's patient capital, it's also liquid capital.
Yeah. Perfect. And then about creating new instruments, you know, you did mention actually, you know, and this kind of, I know that we're jumping a bit from kind of retail and some of your, you know, client customers on that aspect, and then we are jumping to like the bigger market, right? But we have, you know, impact bonds, you know, which is, or green bonds, which is one that is kind of more developed market, you know, that as people know it. I have heard, but I haven't worked with, you know, coral reefs, insurance, you know, P2P projects. You mentioned the fixed income products, you know, from Simon Bond. There are some debt equity convertibles. It's a social tech exchange, I think somebody was mentioning to me about. Is there something, do we need all of these, or is there something that we're missing, or?
I think what we need to see more of those funds, and, you know, being launched, you know, across, you know, many asset classes, and with, you know, different themes that they're supporting. So yeah, I think we are encouraging a lot of the asset managers we work with to explore and also go beyond a number of them. And what's sort of quite, I would say, topical at the moment is to talk about ESG, you know, environmental and social and governance criteria, which is more and more embedded in every fund manager's process. And with a number of those fund managers, we're telling them, it's good you're looking at the operational side of the business, but you're not going far enough. You don't have the big picture of the company. You should also focus on the product and services. So we're definitely sort of pushing fund managers to look at the overall impact of a company and not only, you know, cherry picking. And the great news is, as there is a growing demand from the end clients, being the institution and also the private clients, to make that positive impact, they all realize that actually they need to build, you know, their proposition to meet this demand. And, you know, I think it was the CEO of BlackRock, I think just earlier in the week, he said that, you know, sustainable investing, it will become mainstream. So it's I think, you know, every person you listen to is talking about it, but they're talking about it not because it's you know, it's fashionable, but because it makes sense.
Okay. But in summary, we're saying, if you are a retail, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith investor, just try to focus on put your money aligned to your values into simple products, as, you know, through your financial advisor, which is going to go into funds, which is going to go into equities, and potentially into debt. And then for the larger institutions to actually not only focus on, let's say, green bonds, but then look at, you know, where else they can actually put their funds, potentially into, again, funds of funds like yours, to actually make that impact, you know, more real. Yeah.
Exactly.
Just a quick one, in case you have any advice for the actual companies looking for funding that then may actually go to some of your funds where you're investing. Anything that you recommend to them to focus on or what growth levels, sure, you know, are they ideal to be at, you know, to approach this type of investment?
So in terms of the companies we work with, they are already listed in the market, okay, on the equity side, and on the bond side, they tend to be already relatively of a larger size. So for those companies to really appeal to us, what's really important is that are they providing us with enough data which, you know, will give us conviction that they're making that positive impact. But not only you need to give that data, but you need actually to build a framework to collect that data. And you want to go, because one of the key goals of impact investing is not only to measure the outputs, so i.e. the impact that you've achieved, let's say over a over a year, mm-hmm, but actually what are the outcomes? So looking at more the longer term impact. But to be able to measure the longer term impact, you need to build a framework so that you can sort of collect that impact over time, and then measure the outcomes over time. And that's, you know, that's something we're just starting to see. You know, it's let's be honest, you know, we're not there yet. But a company which is very clear about their intention and very clear on how they're going to collect data and very clear on how they believe they will make an impact, definitely will be, you know, appealing to us, provided obviously that they've got the right business model.
Yes, of course, that they are sustainable themselves.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so we're kind of coming to the last kind of themes and questions. So I just wanted to check with you in terms of EQ, you know, and the future of EQ investors and your growth. What does the future look like for you in the next 5-10 years?
I don't have a crystal ball. So
What would you like the future to look like?
I mean, what I really would like the future to look like is to see more private clients, you know, being aware that, you know, they can make that positive impact, and while also meeting their financial returns. So I'm hoping for, you know, our message, you know, to be spread across, you know, many communities, regions, cities, networks. So really we're pushing, you know, all our clients, all people we work with to spread the message. Just some stats quickly, but there's about 50% of people in the UK who would like their investment to make a positive impact. But 2/3 of them have never been offered any proposition like that. So, you know, it's, I think, you know, there's a gap here in terms of what people want to do and what they're able to do and what they're being proposed and offered. So my dream is that, you know, would be that, you know, in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, everyone is aware. And then it's a personal decision whether or not they like the concept, whether or not they want to go further and invest. But at least I would love them to be aware it does exist.
Okay. And in more specific terms, how much do you want to grow as a fund? So do you want to double the 120 into, you know, 240, or do you have any specific targets that you are aiming for?
I mean, we don't really set ourselves targets. So with a number of our clients, they are on a journey themselves. So they, you know, they might have dip their toe in the water, you know, get to know what impact investing is all about. We've got regular updates with them, quarterly updates, going through company examples, the impact report as well on an annual basis. So as they're getting more on board with the story, they can see the returns they're generating, then they can themselves increase their allocation to impact, mm-hmm, investing. So, I mean, for us, the idea is not to become the biggest, but to be the best in what we do. So, you know, I think it's the last thing we want to see happening is size. It's at the expense of the quality of the experience that the client, you know, receives. So
I think you mentioned some of them on your website, actually. Yes,
exactly. So you know, there's, you know, we are all, and you know, top management as well. We are all very careful in terms of you know, the feedback we're getting from clients. We actually measure that on our client portal. We're very pleased to see how positive the feedback is from a client. But again, you know, we keep asking the questions with client surveys, and we are very careful about, you know, the experience they're getting, to make sure that, you know, we're really doing our job. You know, the idea is really to be the best, not the biggest.
Yeah. But that said, you did, since I think you mentioned since John Spears joined the company, you know, you've been setting up the structure and the processes and everything to be able to basically manage, you know, much more than what you manage today. So if you have institutional investors interested in coming and talking to you, you would like that.
Yeah, of course. We've got room for growth, definitely.
Perfect. How can people get involved with EQ and the next stages of the company? Any specific kind of recommendations or call to actions?
I mean, definitely, you know, I encourage them to look at our website. They can, you know, contact us directly, but you will see also on the website, you mentioned the financial health check. We also have the online calculator, so people can have a look at, you know, this is how much they would like to invest, and then they can have a look at how much impact they would have achieved over the last year. So there's many as well, you know, blog articles around sustainability and around financial planning that clients can have a look at. And then, of course, you know, if they would like to discuss it further, they can fill in an inquiry form. And if it's a financial advisor, there's also an inquiry form that they can fill in, and we'll be in touch with them.
Perfect. Since you know, this the podcast is called Impact Leaders, we talked a lot about impact and impact investing. And now, just as we come to a close, I wanted to ask you a little bit about you, so that people know who Damien Ladeau is. So how did you manage to be appointed head of impact investment here at EQ Investors, and how did it happen that you evolved into this part of your career?
I think I've been lucky.
Yeah.
I was working for, as I like saying, for one of the least ethical bank you can think of, and it's Merrill Lynch. I was there in 2008, where we were that close to go bankrupt, you know, it was a fantastic experience in terms of, you know, how much you learn from those big institutions. But I'm sorry to say that, you know, the client is not always at the center of their operations, the business. Yeah, exactly. I got, you know, in touch with EQ back in 2011, 2012, and I really loved the concept of impact investing. And then also I feel really empowered by, you know, that project that I had to work on when I joined on my first day in 2012, was, you know, how can we make impact investing into the mainstream. And I found it, oh, that's fantastic, you know, I want to work on that. And then alongside, you know, a number of other people who are still around here, learned a lot about impact, because we are doing on the private equity side. So, you know, we were the first one in the UK to have our impact being audited by Deloitte. So, you know, you learn a lot from all the people around you. Mm-hmm. And then also, actually, it's very interesting, because as an individual, you change yourself as well. It's interesting how you think about, you're more conscious of the impact you have on the planet and to the society. So that's interesting, because not only I've, you know, been managing those portfolios and helping to develop our proposition here, but I think as an individual as well, I think I'm on that journey where, you know, day after day I think about, okay, what can I do better?
And from that perspective, what drives you today, you know?
So what drives me? When I wake up in the morning, you know, it's with joy that I go to work and sort of talk about impact investing, spread the word, and also through the management of our portfolios, also show to clients that they can have the cake and eat it. So that's, you know, really one of the reasons I love my job. But also, you know, it's I'm a father of two daughters, so It's very fair to say, I know it's a bit cliche, but when you have kids, you think about life a bit differently.
Yeah, I can relate.
And you think about their future as well. And what kind of future do you want to leave to them? And actually, and we were talking about it earlier on, offline, JP, but, you know, also, you know, we all going to live, you know, sort of maybe longer than maybe our grandparents have or great-grandparents have done. So, you know, for the many decades we'll still have to live in, hopefully on this earth, then if we don't act on it today, we'll be potentially in a difficult proposition in a few decades' time. So, yeah, so all this is driving my thinking. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm far from being perfect.
Yeah.
But I think if we at least conscious of the impact we have and conscious of the fact that we can, all of us, actually make that positive impact and help that change to happen, then I think we'll be in a much better position in a few years' time.
Excellent. And if you don't mind me asking, this is something that came up on one of my last interviews, you know, do you have anyone that inspires you?
It's
that inspire you through this process?
It's a very good question. As it happens,
even if it was a book or a documentary, by the way, it doesn't have to be an individual.
We could definitely talk about, as I was sort of learning about impact investing, we could talk about Muhammad Yunus, who, you know, launched microfinance in Bangladesh, about 30 years ago. So it's so that's definitely quite inspiring. But actually, there's quite a few books I've read who have really opened my mind. There's one, a French book called Tomorrow, which is I really like because it's about what can we do today to drive change. That's really a book I. But then probably the book I talk a lot about at the moment, I know it's very topical, but it's called No More Plastic, and it really inspired me because not only it's sort of giving an idea of how big the challenge is, but I really like that book because it's again a call to action, and it was eye opening to me how much plastic we have in our day to day life and how much plastic does end up in the ocean and actually how much we can have an impact. So I've actually every people sort of I meet with or sort of I talk about it, and so yeah,
it's tangible. This would be sort of it's very tangible,
exactly.
And visible.
Yeah. Yes,
And then this is maybe for the younger listeners as well, right? So, what would you tell a Damien that is, you know, 20 years younger, or just perhaps, you know, before you're starting university or just coming out of university, about, you know, to embark in a new career or life project?
So I think, you know, what's really interesting is that as we all know, you know, the job available today will be very different from the job available for young starters in 10 years time or 20 years time. I mean, clearly, I mean, we just recruited someone from a master's in sustainability from Imperial College, and the increased interest for sustainability across the corporate companies is just mind blowing. So definitely, you know, if you want to do a career around sustainability, I think this is a job which is going to be there for the future. So definitely, you know, explore that option. And there's so much you can do around sustainability, you know, either, you know, getting involved with charities, either, you know, looking at the environment, looking at society, measuring the impact. There's so much you can do. So I think this is definitely definitely what I'm going to tell my daughters is that, you know, if you want to get into sustainability, I'll help you as much as I can.
So today in financial institutions is compliance, tomorrow is going to be sustainability.
Exactly, right? Let's hope so, yeah.
As a leader, right? So, you know, you manage a team here, but at the same time, you do work with a lot of leaders across, you know, your investees, across the funds you invest in, and you actually, you know, talk to, you know, institutions and companies, you know, alike. So, what in your view, you know, your personal view, what does it take to be a leader and perhaps to do what you do?
I don't know if I would call myself a leader, but I think the one thing that I hate seeing is people not sort of keep advancing. You know, I think if you need to always challenge yourself, you know, your convictions, you know, your knowledge, and always need to push the boundaries. So, you know, all the people who sort of, I'm lucky enough, you know, all the people I work with, they all that sort of same mindset is that this is what we do today, this is what we know today, this is not good enough. So let's keep pushing the boundaries. And that's, I think that's really what, I mean, if I think, you know, you need, when you go to work, you know, you need to have that sort of that passion that what you do is making that impact. And I think you're making that additional impact back to additionality by always pushing boundaries.
Excellent. And your best recommendation to others that want to get involved with impact investing?
At sort of a personal level for their money or for it's more.
You pick. Which area would you like? But you know, could be
sure. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely encourage, you know, anyone to turn their financial advisors if they have one in terms of impact investing. I think that would be quite interesting to see what the feedback they're getting. But then, yeah, I mean, it's I think impact investing, it's what we call common sense investing at EQ. And so I think it's really worth exploring for anyone who wants to align their investments with their values.
Okay. I'm basically, just to finish on that, to call, what is the last call to action that you would ask anyone and everyone, you know, to do?
Google impact investing, look at, you know, what it is all about, get involved, potentially talk to us. And I think, you know, that's such a fantastic sort of feel-good factor by getting involved. So I really encourage you to get on board.
Perfect. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you personally, Damien, any preferred?
I'm on LinkedIn. I always respond to messages. So, you know, feel free to contact me on LinkedIn. Yes.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much for your time. Well, bye for now. And until our next episode of Impact Leaders.
Thank you, JP.
This was Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.